You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hour number two rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Zach Jones and Josh Smith. We're talking about college basketball in the break. Don't worry, we're not going to talk about it too long.
Zach screamed. Like,
I'm so excited.
I'm pretty sure it would have been audible throughout our entire offices here.
Good. They also need to be excited as I am. So Gonzaga is officially going to the Pac-12, which is the surprise of nobody. That's been like a report for, I think, quite a few weeks up to this point, as the Pac-12 is kind of trying to like reestablish themselves as like a power, really just make a Power 5 conference. Gonzaga, though, going in just as a basketball school. They're leaving the West Coast Conference. And now it also sounds like Grand Canyon may never actually play a game in the West Coast Conference, as that was also on the Pac-12's wish list as a basketball-only school, or potentially non-football school. I think bringing their other programs as well. That is something I desperately wanted. I know Grand Canyon, many people will say, is a quote-unquote fake school. I'm not saying it. I've seen other people say it. And I like their athletic program. I think they've put a lot into it. They're a lot of fun. They've got a cool color dynamic with the purple, black, and white. I think it looks great. And I was like, I was excited for like this like budding rivalry. Like, they just played St. Mary's in the NCAA tournament. They beat them. So I'm like, oh man, like now the West Coast will have like a legitimate like three teams that should be in the NCAA tournament every year. And you'll actually have battles with Gonzaga, because St. Mary's just, they do not recruit on the same level that Gonzaga does. Grand Canyon recruits better than St. Mary's. Not on Gonzaga's level, but they recruit better than St. Mary's, and they just won their first game in the NCAA tournament. Like, they've kind of just arrived. And then Gonzaga left, and I was like, no! All right, well, Grand Canyon wins the conference. And nay. They might leave. It's still up in the air. They're on, I guess, the wish list. I'm seeing reports on that, but we'll see. I'm just excited. I like college basketball a lot. College football is already, you know, off and running, which has been great. We had an unbelievable game on Saturday this week between Georgia and Alabama that, man, like, it was so good. It was so good. I will tell you, though, if you're a Giants fan, what do you want more as a Giants fan, Josh? Just real quick on here, because I do want to jump on the Chiefs here. But if you're a Giants fan, right now, you're sitting in Newark, New Jersey. You've just watched your fifth rerun of The Sopranos this year.
Can it be anywhere but New Jersey? Does it have to be New Jersey?
Yeah, it has to be.
Fine, I guess. I'm moving. First thing, I'm moving.
Fair. What's the quarterback situation? Daniel Jones is gone. I think we all know that.
Yeah. He has to be.
What would you rather do? Pay, as I put it, a GDP of a small European country for Sam Darnold, or draft Jalen Milroe.
Ooh.
Because I left that game. I will tell you right now, going into this college season, I thought Milroe was a lot of fun, but I didn't know if he was an NFL quarterback. He made a number of quote-unquote Saturday or Sunday throws that like have now gotten me excited about him, because his ability to run
is
so dangerous.
I don't know why I'm thinking about this. This is an easy decision. You draft Jalen Milroe.
You go the young guy. You go Milroe.
Because I'm thinking about it. And yes, Sam Darnold is still quote-unquote young. He's Josh Allen's age.
I'm pretty sure Burrow's older.
No. What?
I'm like 99.9% sure that Joe Burrow's older than Sam Darnold. Darnold was younger coming out of the draft. He was 21. And like, not like I'm going to turn 22.
They're the same age. They're both 27. Wait.
Who has the earliest birthday?
Ooh. Joe Burrow, December 10th, 1996. Sam Darnold, June 5th, 1997.
Well, I forget how old Joe Burrow was when he came out of the draft. I mean, he was an older guy.
He doesn't look it, though. That's the other thing.
No. I mean, he's still like, young. He's 27, right?
No. But like, you look, right. But you look at him, and he looks like he's like 25.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically the same.
And 2 years in the NFL is a lot different than two years in real life.
We're not going to ultimately change here until we're like 35.
No, I know.
I'm going to look relatively the same.
Well, and when you're looking at an NFL player, or any athlete for that matter, 25 to 27 is a big difference, especially in the NFL.
Yeah,
fair. Like, obviously, position varies. Quarterback, it's not that big of a deal. But like, if it's a running back and he's 25 or he's 27, it's like, whoa, that's an old man over there.
But if I'm a Giants fan,
You got to draft Jalen Miller. I mean, look, Sam Darnold is looking to be really good right now, but that's with Kevin O'Connell. That's with Justin Jefferson. Well, that's with
But if you're the Giants, you can argue we have Brian Daboll. He got
right
easily the most out of Daniel Jones that anyone could.
Mm-hmm.
Took him to the playoffs, won a playoff game. You have maybe the ascending star in the sport in Malik Nabers. I don't know.
Putting Milroe with Nabers, though.
That'll feed families.
Yeah.
that'll be fun. But now, and here's the thing. So I said it as a Giants fan. But if you're Joe Shane and Brian Daboll and you get another shot at this, you're not drafting a quarterback.
No, you're taking Sam Darnold.
You're taking what looks to be the surefire thing.
Depending on how the rest of the season goes.
Sure.
Because, again, there is time for Sam Darnold to Darnold himself and fall apart.
I'm going to be so upset about that.
I don't think it'll happen, but...
I'll be crushed. They're a lot. They're interesting, though.
It does go back to...
The Giants in terms of, like, I think they've got maybe the foundations to be a good team. They're just truly a quarterback away from being at least relatively competitive, but a quarterback changes everything in a room. It changes everything on a team, everything. So if they were to get a guy like Darnold who really had ascended into, oh, man, like this is what everyone thought after the Rose Bowl game against Penn State that he could be.
Right.
This is what got him drafted third overall by the Jets.
Well, I was just about to bring up the draft, too, because think about it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills obviously draft Josh Allen at 7, and the Jets take Darnold at 3.
Mm-hmm.
Was Brian Daboll part of the, I really want Sam Darnold, but I know he's not going to fall to his team?
For the Bills?
For the Bills. Because that's his first draft as an offensive coordinator.
I mean, I've always had a theory that I think Allen was not actually their number one quarterback on the board. Mm-hmm. I do think it was Darnold. That might also just be me being a big Darnold fan that I was.
Yeah.
But also, look, what Allen has become, I think, writes away a lot of what was talked about him pre-draft. But, like,
right, but
was genuine fears. Honestly, if the Bills were unanimous in Allen being their number one quarterback on the mm-hmm. board, I would have been concerned.
Oh, no, I think so, too.
There were legitimate concerns, where with Darnold,
right.
The concern, honestly, was turnovers. Outside of that, it was, all right, like, that's... He's 6'3", 6'4", has got a bazooka of an arm, throws a beautiful football, has led USC to some sort of relevancy, including winning the Rose Bowl. Like you felt great about him.
Yeah.
To the point where I was stunned he wasn't the first overall pick, and Baker was. And I think a lot of people were. When Baker was the first overall pick, that was quite stunning.
I think with Baker, though, it's more than numbers.
Oh.
Like, just the sheer touchdowns he put up.
Him in Oklahoma was awesome.
138 touchdowns.
But I have no insider information. I mean, I was just out of high school at that time.
2018.
2 years out of high school at the time. Yeah. So I no sources. Mm-hmm. I always kind of thought Darnold fit what the Bills wanted.
Right, right.
Allen also kind of fit it.
But he was more of a project.
But he was much more of a project and much more of like a, this could get us fired, where I think at the time Darnold was more perceived as, we'll be fine.
But it also goes back to, you know, Darnold was going to go in the top 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was never going to be a situation where the Bills were somehow going to have Darnold fall to him.
Yeah.
Even if he fell out of the top 3, Cleveland is there again at 4. But never mind.
Who would they take?
They took Baker and Denzel Ward.
Oh, that's right, Denzel.
But then you have Denver at 5. Obviously, they were, I mean, John Elway said earlier this summer he almost took Josh Allen there.
It was if Bradley Chubb wasn't there.
Right. And then Indy. Why did Indy take a guard?
Quentin Nelson. Oh, their offensive line was horrendous.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And remember,
right.
They still had Andrew Luck at the time.
Luck hadn't retired.
It was like, we need to fix this. And he was considered at the time, and even started his career like it, as a generational prospect.
I have a Sports Illustrated, like, college edition of Andrew Luck when he was in college. Like,
mm-hmm.
And it was like about him like bursting onto the scene. And, you know, great. We talked about it last week. That's a great what if in sports.
Oh, I was talking about Quinn Nelson. But yeah, Andrew Luck was considered a generational prospect. I mean, Nelson, when they took him, he was considered as like the best guard prospect.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Luck there. Okay, well, still, regardless, it works both ways. But
He might still have it. 6 Pro Bowls from 2018 to 2023 and 3 first team All Pros, 2018 to 2020, a second team All Pro, 2021. I mean, no, that pick has worked out wonderfully for them.
But again, back to the whole overarching point here. I just wonder what Daboll wanted in that draft. And if he wanted Sam Darnold, he has his chance to get him now as a head coach with Malik Nabers. It's almost like the reverse of now you have the base that you want, kind of, and you don't have to develop the quarterback. But mm-hmm. I still think that Jalen Milroe is the answer. You have to look at the talent he has there and the longevity you could get with him and Neighbors together and then build around that.
His ability to run, you're seeing it with Jaden Daniels. You can slow play the passing game mm-hmm. and sort of build it up as the weeks go on to where now, I mean, what we're seeing with Daniels is he might break the NFL record for completion percentage in a season. And they basically have like Terry McLaurin and that's it. And like Zach Ertz. They really don't have much. Their running game has been stupendous.
Brian Robinson.
With Brian Robinson, Jaden Daniels.
Austin Eckler?
And McMillan? Something like that.
I thought, isn't Austin Eckler also there?
Yeah, but he's hurt.
Oh, that's right.
But they have been great. And then with Milroe, it's the same thing. And you saw what Dable could do with Allen, who could run. Then you bring in a guy who's become a much, much better thrower of the football. I think Kalen DeBoer has gotten so much out of him. He has been awesome to watch at Alabama up to this point. To the point where we're all sitting here going, I thought they were dead.
Nope. Jeremy McNichols.
McNichols. Yeah, they're getting everyone involved. He's getting touchdowns spot.
He's getting touchdowns, yeah.
But they're getting everyone involved, and they're a lot of fun to watch.
Austin Eckler has played 3 games.
So was he just hurt recently? I feel like he didn't play last week.
He only started 1 game.
Okay.
And he's gotten 83 touchdowns and or 83 yards and 1 touchdown.
Yeah. It's mainly been Brian Robinson Jr. with sprinkles in. It's not as aggressive as Detroit, where it's like, no, we have Jameer Gibbs. We also have David Montgomery.
I felt like a fool for drafting Brian Robinson as early as I did, but here we are.
Working out for you.
Fantasy football. Let's go.
So we mentioned it there before our last time out. We kind of got into the weeds there a little bit. But the Kansas City Chiefs, I do want to jump in on them because they, to me, are just a team that I think has been surviving, not thriving, even when they're winning Super Bowls, which is very frustrating. As somebody and as a team that is trying to obviously win their first one, to watch 2 years in a row Kansas City kind of limp to the playoffs, not look that great, but always, and I think rightfully so up to this point, have the benefit of the doubt. But now this year, and this has been my big thing going into this week now after the weekend, has been there is a reason why no team in NFL history, even before the really ascendancy of free agency in the 90s, starting with Reggie White going to Green Bay really being the first big move, that there's never been a three-peat of a Super Bowl champion. Number one, it's hard anyways to get there, even when you're elite. It's why still, even though they lost all four, the Bills making it to 4 in a row is still absurdly impressive.
The Patriots were undefeated and lost in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And really, they weren't even that good in the playoffs. Right. Brady's numbers dipped tremendously from the 50 touchdowns. They're going scorched earth on the NFL. The Chiefs have sort of now run into a problem that, well, no one ever wants to kind of put out there and say, well, if this happens, they'll lose. But ultimately, it does happen a lot. Injuries. And they've sort of left themselves open to this because they've missed a lot at the wide receiver position. They have. Sky Moore has been a guy that, went from unplayable to now he has to play. He has not been good at all. He's not getting snaps. He's not getting targets.
I mean, they're relying
on the field.
They're about to be relying on Mecole Hardman.
Again. And he was perfect for them when he was their wide receiver 4 that could kind of be the fast gadget guy.
And Juju Smith-Schuster.
His knee might be shot.
Right. It's their offense looks so good just because of Patrick Mahomes, but mm-hmm. underneath that, and that's why I put it up on Twitter if you want to check it out. I just put up a question simply, in the AFC, are the Chiefs a paper tiger, mm-hmm. given all their injuries? And I look at everything they have, and it's basically just like Mahomes
and the defense.
The defense.
It's the defense.
The defense is very good. I will say that.
They've kept them alive.
Yeah. There's a reason why Chris Jones is as important as he is to this team. It's because he's a mainstay in that defense. And you're even getting a lot more out of their secondary and linebackers than you have in years past, I think.
Well, because they've nailed the draft in terms of Nick Bolton getting there, mm-hmm. McDuffie, stuff like that. Like, they've nailed those defensive picks. The problem is, though, you saw it last year. They needed everything out of everyone to get to the Super Bowl, and then it took overtime to win it. It took everything. Mahomes, I think it was right at the beginning of training camp or a little bit into it, mm-hmm. said, we know we didn't play good football. We knew most of the year.
Yeah, they said it wasn't fun.
Yeah, it was not fun. Well, yeah, and it's, you know, I know there was a thing about Brady and Mayfield.
Oh,
and
that
like,
also.
You know,
right.
I had fun because we were winning Super Bowls. And it's like, yeah, I think most of your teammates have kind of acknowledged, though, like, we went to New England to win Super Bowls. We didn't go to have fun. Like, it was it was basically boot camp. Like, it was hell.
Right. Well, but, and you know, we did this earlier with the Texans where we look at their wins this year or their records this year in terms of how the games went and everything like that and how close everything was. The Chiefs is the same thing. They barely beat Baltimore in week one because Isaiah Likely's foot is a half size too big.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if he had size 10 sneakers, they win the game.
They beat the Bengals by 1 point, 26-25.
And if Jamar Chase doesn't freak out because of a non-call, that's not a 15-yard penalty the other way. They maybe keep driving.
The Falcons game, I mean, 22-17, it's not – it's still close.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt more in control, right? Like, it didn't really feel like it did.
It was more just Falcons offense couldn't really get anything going.
Yeah,
and I mean,
I think that's probably why they felt like
Butker
had a lot of field goals
in this game as well. I think three straight scoring drives of field goals.
Yeah.
So that's where it felt more in control. But again, that's their biggest issue is their offense isn't scoring.
And then last week you go to the Chargers and you beat them 17-10. The leading rusher in that game was Kareem Hunt.
Welcome back.
69 yards.
Welcome back, Kareem Hunt.
And then the leading receiver, Travis Kelce, with 89 yards.
And I don't know how sustainable that is.
No, it's not. I mean,
he looks shot.
Mahomes threw for 245 yards in that game, but to who?
It was Kelce and Worthy.
89 yards to Kelce, and then 73 to Worthy, and then everything else is just kind of split up amongst the rest of the team. I mean, Sky Moore gets two targets, no catches, no yards.
Like, that's been the thing up to this point is you've been looking at the Chiefs all year, going, man, they don't look that good, and they don't. Now they've built themselves a cushion.
Mm-hmm.
They're 4-0.
Right.
They're going to be there in the playoffs. They're likely, if not, I mean, whatever. They should be minus money at this point to win the AFC West because that division is a joke.
Right.
But New Orleans is a tough team. We'll see how that goes. Then they get the bye, and then they get at San Francisco.
They get the early bye, too. Wow.
Yeah, it's very early bye. But I don't actually think that's going to be good for them. I think
they're a
team that like has desperately needed.
Like, I'm happy. The Bills' bye is what, 13?
It's late, yeah.
Week 12, maybe?
Looking at it now. Theirs is week
13.
13.
Oh, wait, no, 12. Excuse me. 13 is the next game against San Francisco.
Oh, right.
But so,
that game.
Is their schedule necessarily hard? No. But
I think part of it, though, is a lot like with the Bills' schedule. You can look at their division just being bad.
Well, a very similar thing, too, as well. They're not really caring about the division anymore. They know they're probably going to win it every year.
They haven't for however many years now. The Bills, I feel like, were just getting to the point of, okay, the division doesn't matter because Miami threatened you last year, and not that it doesn't matter.
I want to word it better than making it sound like the parties aren't as fun anymore.
Right. The division it's expected.
It's a means to an end.
And it shouldn't be that way, but it's just the fact that, yes, last year Miami threatened you.
Mm-hmm.
They were there for a second. Well, they were actually there for most of the season. They threw it away in a second.
Yep.
But with the Chiefs, it's much of the same thing. You can look at their division. It's very comparable to the AFC East. You have the Broncos. You could kind of compare them to the Patriots in terms of you're rebuilding. You're starting anew, right? You can look at the Chargers and I don't really know if you can call them the Dolphins because I think Justin Herbert's better than Tua, but you can.
Yeah, but they're the team that's supposed to constantly threaten and they never do.
Fall apart. The Raiders and the Jets don't have many similarities except for the fact that they're both bad, but yeah. I mean.
And they're kind of always bad.
Yeah, right. And you kind of expect them to be. So it's very comparable in the two divisions. So like you said, the Chiefs aren't looking at the division anymore. They're looking at the conference and making it to the Super Bowl and getting that one seed, getting that first round bye. That's what's their goal to start the year.
And I just,
right?
One seed maybe. I don't know how they're. Look, again, there's a reason why no one has ever three-peated.
Exactly.
And I think that's for me is it opens up a window to maybe for the Bills in a transition year to strike while the iron's hot.
And
you mentioned there's a good chance they meet Baltimore. Maybe in the playoffs, sure, but Baltimore also can fall short. It's not like Baltimore themselves has been perfect in the playoffs. Oftentimes, they're the biggest disappointment in the playoffs.
Right.
Especially
last year.
Yeah, not the Bills. The Baltimore Ravens have oftentimes been the biggest disappointment. They're the team that miraculously throws everything in the air and goes, we're going to change it up, baby. And it's a disaster. And so that's, again, it's early. It's October 1st. We're through the first month of the season.
Right.
But through the first month of the season, I think the storylines have been Minnesota is, oh my gosh, good. Kansas City, the injuries keep piling up. They'll get Isaiah Pacheco back, I think, in a few weeks. Stuff like that. We'll see how the second opinion goes for Rashee Rice. I think, though, that's going to be pretty much the whole year, if not basically the whole year. Hollywood Brown's already out. You're going to have to get a ton from Xavier Worthy, which we'll see how that goes. Baltimore's good. They do still give up a lot in the second half. The Bills are a bad turnover and a bad play call away from really making that a game. Bengals are staring down the pipe of 1-4. They are not in a good situation at all with playing Baltimore this week. Houston looks very vulnerable, namely on the offensive line. Even with the wide receiver weapons they have, with Nico Collins looking like a freak of nature, Stephon Diggs is their wide receiver too and looks good in that role. Most false start penalties. I have to look at the sack numbers, but I think they're up there as well on that, or at least the pressure rates. You know, Jacksonville never got off the ground. They're 0-4. Doug Peterson probably should be the first coach fired. Cleveland. When will you bench Deshaun Watson?
How do you feel about the Chargers?
They're still the Chargers. Also, their injuries.
Right.
Two tackles.
They have the bye week, though.
They have the bye week, but they're kind of a same thing like with Baltimore in the playoffs or even the Bills in the playoffs. Like, until you do it, I'm not going to trust you.
Yeah.
They just cannot get off the ground. You needed to win that game. It's at home. They immediately lose Rashee Rice. They're not moving the ball. You scored early. It felt good.
They have a relatively easy schedule the rest of the way. I mean, you have Denver, mm-hmm. Arizona, New Orleans, which, depending on how the next few weeks go, we'll see if New Orleans was also just kind of a flash in the pan.
Yeah.
And then you have Cleveland, Tennessee, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Atlanta, Kansas City again, Tampa Bay, Denver, New England, Las Vegas. Like, they have the potential to be there, and you'll have to see, you know, if Harbaugh can actually put it all together. But
which I think he will, just maybe not this year.
Right. Yeah, it might just take a couple of years. But I don't know. I look at around the AFC, and it's all the usual suspects of, aside from the Bengals, really, of the Bills, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and mm-hmm. the Texans.
Yep.
And out of those four, I think it's the Bills and the Ravens that are the best in there.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, it's, like you said, October, but it still feels like it's just kind of right there for the taking.
Well, and I think it's also one of those things of, like, you know, when are we allowed then to, like, really start talking about these things? Week 6, 7, 8? I mean, you're through 1 month. Storylines are beginning to develop. You've kind of got an idea of who's going to be around, you know, towards the end of the year. You're starting to figure that out. I think it's okay to start talking about these, but also acknowledging that there's a lot of season left. Likewise, though, for the Bills, I think good news, they're also getting healthier, which is not something that happens really ever in NFL seasons. You typically get more injured, or your depth gets tested far more. 803-0550 is the number to call. I want to jump into baseball. Of course, the news last night that Pete Rose has died. We also have the playoffs starting today. I want to jump in a little bit on that coming up after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
Couple of times, Shao kicks and he fires. Rose swings.
There it is! Get out!
If you have missed it, announced late last night, MLB's all-time hit leader Pete Rose died at the age of 83. That was ultimately the hit that got him the record. He does finish, though, his 24-season career with 4,256 hits. Played predominantly with the Cincinnati Reds. I think ultimately did finish, though, his career with the Philadelphia Phillies in 80. He's maybe the most polarizing figure in modern sports.
No, he finished his career with Cincinnati.
He did finish it with Cincinnati?
He played in Philly for,
I think it was just
5 years.
Oh, okay.
He also played in Montreal for 1 year.
Did he?
And then he came back.
And then he went back to the Reds.
So he went from Cincinnati to Philly in 1979.
Okay.
And then back to, or then to Montreal in 1984. And then back to Cincinnati in that 84 season and retired in 86.
And then ultimately for a few years manages the Reds.
Yep.
Which is where the kind of, the up and down controversial legacy for Rose comes in. I want to start out right here before we dive into this. I do think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. I think he will get in the Hall of Fame now that he has passed away, which I think is very gross. There is a documentary on HBO I want to watch badly. I've watched the first episode and I just kind of put it away, but it's on Rose and his legacy, and you're getting a lot of people, sportscasters, what have you, talking about the man himself and his gambling and ultimately what got him banned from baseball. It is something, though, I really do want to catch up on, because I find him to be an interesting character in sports, if that's not a great way to put it. But this is very baseball, that one of their greatest players of all time is also one of their most controversial. We talk about the home run between Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, ultimately as well. Also, Ken Griffey Jr., by the way, starts that year off as kind of considered maybe one of the favorites along with McGwire, but both McGwire and Sosa, steroids. And so a summer that arguably saved baseball is sort of marred in this controversy. That is baseball. It is a controversial sport. Even when it's not doing anything rule-breaking, it's a slow game. It's boring at times. Yeah. They make rule changes to speed the game up.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds, I think many people argue, is a Hall of Famer before the steroids even come in. Same with A-Rod. You have the Black Sox way back in the 19-teens. Mm-hmm. It's a sport that is marred by controversy that absolutely hates itself for it. And that is my frustrating thing. When I said there that I think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, and I think it's going to be gross when he's ultimately voted in, I think basically next year, whenever the voting comes up, he'll be voted in, is because I think baseball is very petty, or mainly the Baseball Hall of Fame is very petty.
Right.
And they don't want him in. But ultimately, though, as well, in the same breath, I think Rose ultimately has handled himself with the gambling stuff poorly. The constant back and forth of, oh, I did it. Well, no, I actually never did it. Well, I only bet on my teams. Well, actually, no, I didn't bet on the Reds when certain pitchers were playing.
He had bad PR.
Yeah.
And I think the hardest part is you look at his career accolades. He was MVP 1 year, Rookie of the Year, 17-time All-Star, mm-hmm. 2-time Gold Glove, 3 World Series winner, Silver Slugger, World Series MVP once, 3 times in the batting title. He also played the most games in MLB history.
My goodness.
3,562.
Oof. I think as well, too.
By 200 games, he has the most games played in MLB history.
Wow.
Yeah. He also has the most plate appearances and the most at-bats and the most hits.
Yep. So, he is the batting leader. I mean, that's...
He has 15,890 plate appearances.
Wow.
And out of those, he had 4,256 hits.
I think as well, what was also, and this is in that first episode of the documentary that's on HBO, that I'm going to watch it, I think, tonight. The big thing, too, was, I mean, his nickname as well, Charlie Hustle, he was not this athletic freak. He was not a dude that was, he wasn't even really a home run hitter. He was not.
Like I said, he had 4,256 hits. How many home runs did he have? Guess.
I'd be very surprised if it's over 300.
It's half of that. It's 160.
Yeah, I would be stunned.
160 home runs, but 4,256 hits.
Yeah, he was I don't think this is one of his nicknames, but he was Mr. Fundamental. He was a guy that you probably had your little league coaches going, watch Pete Rose play, because he plays hard. He does everything kind
to
of
quote
like
Money
fundamentally
ball,
correct.
He gets on base.
He got hits, and it's just
he's also a switch hitter.
Yeah, but it is a shame with Rose's. And I think what's a shame, too, is I think a lot of fans kind of knew this conversation was coming of, when Pete Rose passes away, that's when the Baseball Hall of Fame will let him in.
It's always been in the back of people's minds, too.
And I hate it, because you knew it was coming, and that was the thing of, everyone knows the Hall of Fame is petty, and they're going to fight tooth and nail to not get him in, and then the moment, in a way, he can't enjoy it, in a moment where he can't, have a speech at Cooperstown and all that stuff, they'll let him in. And it feels really wrong.
I think it's hard, because you don't want to put someone that's involved with a major scandal in your league in your league's Hall of Fame. But at the same time, look at Barry Bonds.
Well, but I think Barry Bonds is not going
to
get in.
I know. But that's the problem that I'm trying to bring up. Barry Bonds is one of the biggest faces in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And he's never going to get in the baseball.
Never
going
to get in. And the thing is, it's also something I very much enjoy about baseball,
it is a sport that just is so controversial in and of itself. Yeah. It is.
And it causes its own problems.
It absolutely does.
It can't get out of its own way sometimes. But and I'm not, and this is no discredit to Pete Rose, because obviously he has many different all-time career accolades in terms of the MLB.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't get involved with this whole betting thing, if none of this ever came out, or if he just never did it, how much of a figure is he in the game? Obviously, like I said, he has the most hits, he has the most games played, he has all that, but is he as much of a figure or a, you know, folk legend as he is?
I think he would be if there's not the betting scandal. I think he would be, because there is this uncomfortableness of talking about his legacy. Like, if you're on MLB Network or really anything with baseball, there's always this uncomfortableness of, like, but the gambling and stuff like that.
I'm saying take out the gambling.
No, what I'm saying is I think he's talked about way more.
Oh, okay.
Because, like, he is the perfect, like, he was a hustle guy. He played the game the right way.
Right.
He is the batting leader. Hits, of course, is the big one, but as you brought up, it's the plate appearances, the most games played. Like, he is that guy. I think he is revered if it wasn't for the gambling. As well, I think up to this point was not even having a bad managerial career with the Reds. So, like, you would have had up to a point of, like, just like, of course we're going to talk about him a lot. Where now, we're sitting here talking about, the man passed away yesterday, and it's difficult to talk about his legacy because of the being banned from baseball.
As a manager, he managed for 6 seasons,
mm-hmm,
and had an overall record of 412 and 373.
Did he make the playoffs at all in that run? I was gonna say, I don't even know if it shows it. I mean, he's above 500. I'll take it.
Yeah, he was above 500, but I'm not seeing
any playoff appearances.
I'm gonna have to dig a little
but
deep on this.
It's just it's something I really like about baseball that baseball hates about itself, and I can understand why. If I was the commissioner, I probably wouldn't like it either. But as a fan, I really do like how just kind of grimy the game can be a little bit. You know, had the whole steroid era. I've already brought up the Black Sox scandal.
3 years of that, he was a player manager.
Oh, boy.
The first 3 years, he was a player manager. When he goes back to the Reds in 84.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that Pete Rose documentary. Let's go to the phones here, though. We've got Rick on the line. Rick, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
Doing very well.
I just had to chime in about Pete Rose. I'm a diehard baseball fan only because I'm a Mets fan, so you're definitely diehard.
Congratulations on yesterday.
Hey, go Mets. Big game today.
I appreciate it. Now, I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and when you go in there, you see Pete Rose's glove. You see Pete Rose's bat. You see Pete Rose's uniform. You see Pete Rose's cleats. Just put the guy in there, man. I understand what happened, but Michael Jordan's still in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and that dude gambled with millions of dollars.
Yeah, like relatively well-known. Rick, yeah, thanks for the call. That was the thing, too. Like, that's relatively – I mean, in the documentary of The Last Dance, it was like he would gamble on everything. The problem was – and while I don't totally agree with it, he was gambling on baseball. Now, what is funny on that, Rick brings out, basically everything of Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame except the man himself.
Right.
Which is wild. By the way, have you ever been to Cooperstown, Josh?
I have not. That's one of the bucket list places.
I was hoping you said no. Because if you said yes, it would be, oh, okay, all right, cool. It's like a religious experience going to Cooperstown. I'm not even the biggest baseball purist. Like, it's probably like 4 or 5 on like my list of sports I love watching. I love watching playoff baseball. Like today, I'm super excited. Games start like at 2:30, and they go basically the whole day. Can't wait. I'm excited for that. But it is like an experience, especially like if you ever watch like the Ken Burns documentaries, which like end at like the 90s. Like they don't even have the modern name. It's oh man, it's just it is a lot. It is really, really cool. But yeah, Rick's absolutely right to bring up that like basically everything of Pete Rose is in the Hall of Fame but the man himself. And that's why, to your point as well, when like, you know, if this almost folk hero, folk legend thing isn't there as he talked about as much, I think he's talked about so much more because he finishes playing like the mid 80s around there and all of his titles still stand, all of them. Or all of the important ones, you know, and we've seen guys like Ken Griffey come into the game, Mike Trout, you know, Shohei Ohtani now. And I get these guys aren't necessarily hitting for average, but I think that's also a big thing, too, you know, coming into today's game where guys don't hit for average anymore. That was a big story of this year in baseball. I think it's changed a little bit, but that was a big thing to start the year of, you know, they had like 4 guys hitting above 300.
In his time as manager, they did not make it to the postseason.
But I think even now, more than ever, he'd be talked about a lot because his player just isn't around anymore.
Right.
And that his records really might stand the test of time.
Yeah, and it also goes back to the whole, like, you know, the caller that brought up Michael Jordan. And it's, like, I've never had an issue with players betting on other sports. I've never really, like, when all that stuff came out a couple of years ago with Jameson Williams and a lot of the Lions players, like, betting in the Lions facility.
It was in the facility or on the plane.
It mattered to me what they were betting on. Mm-hmm. If they weren't betting on football, I don't care. You can bet on cricket for all I care about. But if you're betting about your sport, that's a little shady.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of have an issue with it because it's directly involving you, especially if it's the games and the teams that you're playing for.
And especially because this is baseball. Mm-hmm. Have the Black Sox scandal.
You have
now there is always the fear of were you ever point shaving?
Yeah, and in baseball more than any other sport, mm-hmm. you have a really easy ability to look bad and do purposely bad, and everyone's he's just got a bad day. Like think about like if you see in football like a player like purposely going down,
faking the injuries,
right? Or just like. He could have had a touchdown there, but he just fell short.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the second half. Like, it's not like a time management thing. Like, it's clearly, you know, something else. Like, that's where you can tell, like, what's happening. But in baseball, it's super difficult to tell because, I mean,
it's a hard game in and of itself.
Yeah, I could go up there and go 0-4 and I'm like, he'll be fine tomorrow.
Yep.
Like, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but so I could have gone 0-4 and won $1,000, you know,
and then and you have that, and then him going back and forth, lying about
right,
it initially,
yeah, never really going. It was, right,
you know, I'm giving baseball a lot of grief here, but if I was in their spot, I probably would have come away with the same thing. 803-0550, the number to call. Got to take a quick time out here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. Get you over to Sabres Live. You're listening to the Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone, to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. We'll get more of a look at the Houston Texans tomorrow, as we'll have John Harris on the show at 11 a.m. Very excited for that. But yesterday in the hockey world, there was some stuff going on with the Boston Bruins. Josh,
you hate to see their downfall.
Yeah, you've been getting fired
here
up.
Here it comes. We said it was coming last year. No, it's this year.
Oh,
the
boy.
Boston Bruins do not have an NHL-caliber goaltender right now. Jonas Korpisalo, yes. Well, he has had good years in the NHL. He's not what he used to be. He is their goaltender. You're probably asking yourself, hey, what happened to Jeremy Swayman? Well, he's not signing a contract. And according to president of hockey ops, Cam Neely of the Boston Bruins, they offered him a $64 million deal. Jeremy Swayman's agent says, we've never heard of this $64 million deal.
Yeah, it's not good when the agent gets involved and is like, I'm just going to clear the air here.
Right.
I don't know what that number is.
Jonas Korpisalo, last season, played 55 games for the Ottawa Senators. You want to know which numbers were, Zach? Because I know you're a big save percentage guy.
Big save percentage guy.
0.89.
That's really bad.
And 3.2 goals against. Granted, it's the Ottawa Senators, and you're thinking, well, Josh, the Bruins, they're always good. They figure it out somehow. Well, they have David Pastrnak, and they have the shell of Brad Marchand.
Sure.
That's kind of it.
Playoffs. They will be there.
If they make it to the playoffs this year, if they're even in the top three of the division, I'm going to be so upset. There's no way they should be that good this year. Also, former Buffalo Sabre Nikita Zadorov signed with the Bruins.
Oh, very nice.
On July 1st. Completely missed that.
Yeah, they're almost definitely going to be good, and it's very frustrating.
I don't understand why, though. Like, looking at these people, this roster breakdown, I don't understand how they would be good.
They figured out.
I really
for
don't.
Whatever reason they
all
are
all of their right wingers, I've never heard of them except for Pastrnak.
It's going to be.
I don't even know who the third and fourth line right wingers are.
It is going to sting when they make the playoffs.
It is.
Speaking of hockey season, though, that gets underway on Friday. The Sabres wrapped up their preseason schedule last night with an overtime win, and now on Friday over in Prague. They will take on the Devils to get the season underway. I believe puck drop is at 1 o'clock pregame right here on WGR. We'll actually start at noon. But speaking of hockey, coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live, you're listening to WGR.